All right, well, good evening to the congregation of Myerstown. It's not very often I speak here twice in 2-3 days, so it is good to be back with you again. And when Kirk called and asked if I'd share a little bit, or somebody would, about the ministry, I figured I would come do it, and since I kind of have a part in it. But yeah, I would say we don't do this a lot, but I don't mind doing it. We do stay busy in the city of Reading. Somebody said to me recently, they said, you know what, and they kind of, because there are a lot of things that we get involved in, and it is interesting that I'm not surprised, probably a lot of you here don't know very little of what we do, because, you know, we're all kind of doing our, you know, we each have lives that we live. And I know, you know, a lot of things that other ministries are doing I don't know about. And somebody actually said to me, they said, you guys in Reading, you guys almost come across as, arrogant's the wrong word, but you're just like cooped up down there, and you're kind of just like, there you are. And I said, you know, there's some truth to it, because we're busy. We're always like flying around doing our own thing, and we don't get out maybe as much as we should. And I say, come weekends and things that I should be doing things, I say, I'm tired. I just want to stay home. And I said, maybe get a presence on social media or something. I'm like, wow, I'm not really into that. But we certainly do not want to come across in any way like that. And I want to be real careful tonight, and as I share, you know, I'm sharing the things we're doing. And as I often say, we've learned an awful lot. We've made an awful lot of mistakes. But I don't want to come across in any way like this is the way it should be done and everybody should be doing what we're doing. That is, I do not feel that way at all. But I am excited for the things that are going on. If you were here on Sunday, I'm just going to read a couple of verses, ironically, exactly where I left off, because I spoke from Matthew 5. I did 3 through 12, and verses 13 to 16 read like this. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt have lost its savor, wherewith shall it be salted? It is henceforth good for nothing but to be cast out and to be trodden under foot of men. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle, put it on a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. And so certainly that is our goal, is to be a light, to be salt and light, because as you know, our world desperately needs it. Well, Ryan, if you want to put that first picture up there for me, it's up to you. If you want to dim the lights or you want to turn the lights, that would be fine. You're not going to be doing any reading. And I'm sorry, I'm probably going to be in the way for some of you. But yeah, that is a picture of East Reading. And if you know anything about Reading is kind of in a valley. And one side of I live kind of right amongst these trees, and then the valley goes down and up the other side. And right there is our school. Some of your children go to our school. And our old church building where we were for many years, of course, right there. And Brother Fox lived right there for many years. And our new church is right there. Reading is a city of about 90,000 people. And Reading has really changed in the time that I have lived there. When I grew up, it was a very Polish Catholic area. And it was a white community and largely all Polish Catholics. And they, for the most part, have died off. And we've quickly changed to a Latino community. In fact, Reading is, the population is 58% Latino, but the school district is 75% Latino. And so, as you can see, the demographics are changing rapidly. We don't speak a lot of Spanish in our church. The only ones that do, there are a few that served in Nicaragua. Truthfully, all the children are bilingual, no English. The parents can be a struggle, but the children are very good Spanish. That they know Spanish and English. And so it is amazing the change that I have seen in the community. Right behind our school right there, it's just barely off the picture, is a Catholic church. And it was a major Polish Catholic community, a center for many, many years. And in fact, probably 5-6 years ago, I contacted them before we bought a building, and I said, you know, and Catholics don't like to sell buildings. They like to hang on to them, I understand. But I'm like, would you be interested in selling to us? And I think they were offended. And so we moved on and found the building, renovated it. And when you know, we moved in our new building in October. I'll show pictures of it in a few minutes. And this spring, they put it up for sale, and we actually walked through the building. It would have been, I'll just say this, given if we would have been given the two buildings at the same time, we probably would have went with the Catholic building, because it was very large building with, it would have fit our needs in many ways. But there again, similar to Shenandoah and a lot of these other areas, they closed the church. They had closed the school, which had hundreds of children back in their heyday, probably 60s, 70s, 80s. They closed the school. A bunch of huge buildings there right in our neighborhood that are probably going to rot. Who knows? But so the community has really changed. And again, we live amongst the Latino people. And they have a culture, just like we have a culture. And the one thing that I really enjoy about the Latino culture is they are very family-oriented. And they're always doing stuff, you know, together. The local parks in Redding. And Redding doesn't have very many nice parks. Redding's parks are kind of trashed, but right outside of Redding, the county has a lot of beautiful parks. And some of the suburban areas like Exeter and Moton Park, there's a lot of nice parks. Interesting, you go to those parks, they're the only people I see that go to the parks are the Mexicans and the Mennonites. That's it. Like the Latino people and the Mennonites, you seldomly see Caucasian people there. I mean, the Latino people, they loved, I mean, it's Redding, so I mean, it's very common to be just barbecuing on the front porch, a bunch of people. So they're a very, I say, for the most part, they're good neighbors, and they're happy people. And you know, there's some downsides, obviously, to crime in Redding there's a lot of drugs and things, but really, for the most part, I say, I enjoy living in the Latino community and certainly do enjoy it. All right, so that's kind of where we minister in East Redding. Ryan, give me the next picture. And the one thing that Redding is famous for is the dense housing. And as you'll see there, that was a street that I lived on for the first 10 years of my marriage. In a house, not one of these, just around the corner here, but in a house very similar to that. I had four children. And it was on the tight side. But that is what Redding is infamous or famous for, is the very dense housing. And Redding at one time did a lot of manufacturing. The Redding Railroad, when you play Monopoly, that's this Redding. And in fact, the community that I live in is, there's a string of houses up there that were very nice houses. And the Redding Railroad owner lived there and built a couple houses for his children. So just a couple hundred yards from me are some very, very nice houses built by Redding Railroad and some rich businessmen. So there are some very nice houses in Redding. And also, I don't know if you remember Luden's candy. You'd get those cough drops in those rectangular boxes back in the day. I mean, that was made right in Redding. And I live just, you know, two blocks from the mansion that that man built and lived in. And so there are, but for the most part, the Redding housing is this dense housing that you are looking at here. All right, Ryan, give me the next slide. This slide here is very interesting to me because this is kind of where the ministry started. Now, if you look at that, our church today is located right over here. You just barely miss it. And this is a lot where we all park on Sunday morning. And it was in the 1930s when there was a tent meeting held, ironically, right where our people park when they go to church every Sunday right now. And there was a Mennonite church, which many of you would have heard of, the older folks here, 12th and Windsor. And that is kind of where I say our leg of the Mennonites came to Redding. And how did the Mennonites land up in Redding? They were selling their produce. They would come to market. I don't know if any of you's ever stood market. My mother did for many years. But the Mennonites brought their produce and sold it to the people of Redding. And then they decided, hey, maybe we should go and give them the gospel. And so that is really what brought the Mennonites that are there today. Now, interestingly enough, there's another leg of Mennonites that were there since the late 1800s. And that's a local church that is still going, but they are not Anabaptist in any way, shape, or form. They dropped it, I think, in the 60s, 70s. But the Mennonites, as we know them, they came in the, you know, the, I'd say probably in the early 20s, somewhere around that time, maybe a little before. And then they started this tent meeting over in right in our backyard in the 1930s, and was what eventually led to Fairview Christian School and Fairview Mennonite Church. What I really find interesting in this, the history of the Mennonites in Reading, is how it really was five families who said, we're going to commit to Reading. And I just look at how that has mushroomed. I mean, exponential. How many people found the gospel? Oh, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands over the last nearly 100 years, because five families said, you know what, we're going to take the gospel to Reading. And I don't know if any of you, Arthur G. Good, he died recently. I think his parents would have been one of those families. He would have lived up in this area. Orpha Gaiman, who still attends Fairview, her parents were one of those families. So it was, I just marvel at the impact that a few people can make. And I think of those families who committed to Reading some time ago. Go ahead, Ryan, give us the next slide here. That is, some of you will recognize, you've been in there many times, what we call the lighthouse. And interestingly enough, our teachers still live there to this day, and this is where Fairview Mennonite Church started. Our old church is right aside of it, and that's where they started in the 30s. It's interesting how that, you know, it's so common. Everybody just knows it in Reading as the lighthouse. And that is, I remember when I was a little boy, this is probably, I'm going to guess 35, 40 years ago, one of the school teachers, it was just some guy's girlfriend, if that makes any sense. Some guy, his girlfriend drew, didn't marry her, but drew a picture on a wall right over here of a lighthouse. I remember the night she did it. And that lighthouse picture is still there to this day. And forever, the lighthouse has been called the lighthouse. And so that is really, after the tent was just up over here on the street a little bit, and after this started very shortly after that, and for a number of years, it was just a Sunday school. And so what is sort of, it's unique about Fairview, really, I say, is they only ever had five pastors, and they're all living. And that doesn't happen very often. It's only five pastors, and we're all still living. So the first 10, 20 years, it was more of a Sunday school. Was Noah Good maybe the superintendent? I don't know if some of you old timers would know Noah Good, but then when it morphed into a church, officially probably in the early 1940 or so, Luke Horst was there. A couple old time pictures, go ahead. What that next picture there? I like to put this picture up and show people, because people like to tell us preachers, Jim's been told this already, I'm sure, in Leicester. Sometimes people say, man, you guys never change, you know? You won't let us change anything. And I like to kid around them. I look up there and I'm like, huh, that was our church, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80 years ago, whatever. So man, I think it's safe to say we've changed a little bit. So when people accuse me of never changing, you want to look the same in 100 years, yeah. But I like to say this in a serious matter. I say that, you know, whenever you look at history, the Anabaptists have always looked different. We're going to change, that is proof. But we've always been distinct, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's kind of a good thing. And I think it's good for us sometimes. In fact, this week my son is playing at a basketball camp in the city, which maybe we'll get to. Sometimes it can be hard to keep people busy, especially those 13, 14, 15-year-old boys. What do you do with them when... It's nice that, you know, it's just hard to keep them busy. We don't grow corn on macadam, okay? So we can't put them in a cornfield and put them to work. So I sent him he's playing at a basketball camp at LBC. I sent him there for a couple of reasons. We like to play basketball. I want to see him improve his game a little bit in basketball. I sent him there because he's the only kid in the gym wearing long pants. It's one of the reasons I want him to be there, because I think it's kind of, I kind of want him to have to do it. And so I walked in the other day, And the assistant coach recognized me, and I said, yeah, you know. And the way I identified, I'm like, yeah, my kid's the one with the long pants. He's like, yeah, I know who you are, or I know who he is. But it was just, oh, it's good for him. You know what? Go there and wear your long pants. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And so we are always going to look a little different, but we're going to change. And I think that is okay. Hit the next slide, Ryan. Then I might, yeah, go back one. Go ahead, go back. Yes, on this one yet. One of the interesting facts about Reading history, Fairview Mennonite Church, more, I should say, Reading history, not necessarily Fairview Mennonite Church history, is the long line of domestic female workers that have come to Reading. And, you know, it started probably, you know, in the, I don't know if it was the 10s, the 20s, the 30s, but Reading had a really robust ministry where single women, very young, I think, would come and work as, you know, household aides. Many times those those ladies would live right in with the families, live on the second floor, and they would work. And I mean, it was a very organized thing. And in fact, a diary from one of the people that kind of ran and helped organize it showed between 1928 and 1934, 212 women came, Mennonite women, came through that program and served in as workers and ministry workers in Reading. And so I always find that aspect of the, and so it's sort of, it's interesting how it carried on. And most of those, as I said, lived with some of the rich families, and they would live on the second floor, and they would, there was a home on 12th Street, if you ever get to Reading, near Reading High. I know in my lifetime, up to a number of years ago, Millie McGee lived there, and some of those, some ladies lived there, and that was sort of the home, the Reading women's home. And that, and they, it was more of just a, like a home base. So it was, there's a rich history of females coming and working in Reading. And that continued, you know, even at, in my earliest recollections, probably up till I was 10, 15, some of those ladies still lived in this, in that house there, which is the Lighthouse. Some of you might have remembered the name of like an Elsie Gaiman. Some of the remains of Reading that went, I would remember Julie Bresco. And I'm trying to think some of the other names, but these ladies who continued to live in Reading for many, many years after this. And I always think of one funny story with, because in my earliest years, we had these older ladies who lived at the Lighthouse. They always did. And that was just kind of this mission that these domesticated workers, females, eventually ended. I'm not sure in the 40s or whenever it ended. But some of these ladies still just lived in Reading and ministered to single ladies. But Elsie Gaiman, I'm pretty sure she passed in the last 10, 20 years. I don't know. But she lived there for a number of years when I was young. And there was a morning that, and this has, for all, and I will say this too, I look back at how those ladies came to Reading, and I say, man, that took a lot of faith. I couldn't imagine. It was scary enough for me when my daughter left for Grenada. You know, you just kind of, there she goes, but boy, there's so many good people down there, and I know Durbin, and you know, all those people that are there. It makes you feel good. But I'm like, I couldn't imagine sending my daughter, maybe Reading was a wonderful place back then, just go to Reading, you know, and live with the family, and we'll see you whenever we see you. And I think one of the reasons they did that was to help earn money, because I think they would work for rich people and they would help the family who was trying to make ends meet. And I think, boy, that must have been a scary experience to just send your daughter off like that. But I say for the most part, there were some stories that did not turn out well. But I think for the most part, the Lord protected, and a lot of those people had a pretty good, it went well for them. But this, it, there was the only time I can remember somebody really coming into the Lighthouse and just scaring the daylights out of the Lighthouse girls. It was a Saturday morning, and somebody actually came into one of the girls' bedrooms. And this was probably, I don't know if it was 85, 90. You know, one of the Lighthouse girls woke up, and there was a man standing in a room. And she kind of, at first she thought, well, you know, was this Brother Fox? He come in to do something? And she got up and walked out after the guy. Then he walked down the steps, and then she woke the other girls up, and the guy came back in the house. So this was a real terrifying experience. And then fast forward 2 weeks, I was playing on the street. We have parks, but we play on the street. Area. We break windows on cars. That's what you do in Reading. But I was playing on the street with my brother, and they come running down. The guy's back in our house. So we knew where my dad was. He was next door visiting somebody. So Brian and I took off and ran for our dad. It's good it wasn't 10 years later. We would have got ourselves in trouble, him and I. But so we went for dad for help at that point. And so dad was visiting this man. And they both took off for the lighthouse. I can still see them running down Fairview Street. And there happened to be police in the area in an unmarked car, because I guess there were some robberies in the area. And John Cuck, who was following my dad, recognized him as undercover police. And so he yelled, "Burglar!" And my dad was running in the front. Back then he could run. So you get it? There they are running down Fairview Street, "Burglar!" So about the time my dad gets in the house, these undercover cops grab him, and they look like hoodlums. And so he's like, I'm the preacher. And they're identifying themselves as police, and he's identifying himself as the preacher. And, you know, I remember, man, they surrounded the house because they wanted to catch these guys. They got the dog. I'm pretty sure they left the dog loose to clear the house. So this was then an hour or two later. Elsie Gaiman comes home, which prompted this story. Elsie Gaiman, one of these older, she comes home and she opens the door and she pulls a little sticker out of the door and says, "Well, I see the UPS man left a thing here about 4 o'clock. So the man that came to rob the house that day was just the UPS man. He had kind of yelled, "Hey, anybody here?" So I was kind of a funny story with Elsie. So the first time was legit. Somebody was in the house that wasn't one. The second time, when they overreacted, was the UPS man. So that was kind of a funny story with Elsie Gaiman. All right, go ahead, Ryan. Give us the next slide. That is, of course, the church that we just moved out of that was built in 1956. And we parted with that church in October of 2016, just a few months ago. Sadly, the church that went in is not doing well. We thought it was a really nice, you know, it was a Latino church, Assemblies of God. We really believed in them. We wanted them to do well, and they're not doing well. They had a split, and sadly, the pastor got colon cancer. That didn't help, but they also had a nasty split, and they're down to 8 people struggling to pay their rent. And I was talking to a pastor friend of mine in Reading, and he said, "You know what? The Latinos," he told me, "just split like crazy." He said, "In the Assemblies of God, the Pentecostals in Reading," he said, "they just split like crazy." We tend to always say how Mennonites are so terrible at splitting. And I heard a preacher say one time, "South Koreans start a church so they can split the church." Now, he was probably exaggerating too. I say that to say, you know, we're not the only group that struggles at times. We tend to think we're the only ones with any church problems. So the church, we still own it. The group that's in it now is struggling a little bit. So go ahead, Ryan, give me the next slide. That's a picture of Reading. And you know what? Snow is just debilitating to the city. When we had blitzed pretty good in March. When it was last year when we just got drilled, that was just awful. Just Reading schools were closed for a whole week. So this was quite a while ago, but this is what it looks like when it snows a lot in Reading. There is nowhere to go with the snow. And people really do get mad at each other. All right, go ahead, Ryan. Give us the next slide there. This is just run through these rather quickly. This is our new church building that we just moved into a couple years ago. We are really happy for it. If you haven't been there, come visit us sometime. The old church just had a lot of disadvantages. All right, you can stop there, Ryan. Thanks. The handicap facilities were bad. The parking was bad. The nursery was bad. There were just some things that we really, really struggled with. And so we're just really happy. We're blessed to be in our new church, and we are really enjoying it. Next set of slides here is our school. So go ahead, Ryan, just go through the school pictures here. That is our current, there looks like that's a first grade class this year. And that looks like a picture from the middle school. And a picture from the high school geometry class. And you can stop there. So yes, most of you and some of you are familiar with, I see some patrons here, but probably our biggest most time-consuming endeavor is Fairview Christian School. We have 150 students, and roughly a third of them, probably about 50 of those students, are from broken homes. And that definitely adds a lot of challenges. And I say, you know, in the 15 years that I've taught there, I just say the academic, it has widened with so many undisciplined children, and it's gotten harder. And I have said, you know, openly that I wonder if we'll be able to do this in 30 years, just because, you know, the children, it's gotten tougher. And so it is, I would say roughly, and these are not exact, but rough, there's probably maybe now 50, about a third from our church, a third from other Mennonite churches, a third from broken homes, said somewhere in that vein. And so we have a lot of children from broken homes in our school. And so that really does take, that takes a lot of energy for our church and our school, but it's a blessing. The school's in its, this year we are, I don't know if we're celebrating, but it's the 40th year. I don't know if I have a celebration or not, but it is our 40th year. So we have been around for a little while. We moved into that building in 2001, 2002. It's been a real blessing. We added the gymnasium in the back in 2008. So our facility really is a blessing. And I say that, certainly we're not perfect. The school, but I know we work real hard, I'll say. We got a lot of dedicated teachers, a lot of staff that have been there a long time. A lot of our staff's been there 25 years, 15 years, 13 years, 10 years, 10 years, 12 years, 9 years. A lot of our teachers have been there for a long time, and so that's been a real blessing. I tell the teachers often, you know, you don't get paid a lot, but there's a lot of spiffs. And spiffs might be slang for benefits. You know, when I worked at another job way back, they talked about spiffs. And you know what? Today is one of those spiffs. When you guys were out slaving this hot weather, we were in the air conditioning, okay? So it's not always about the money, I tell. And you know what? I tell the staff, you know what? You ain't getting paid a lot, but guess what? Christmas, you get a week and a half. These guys get a day. Thanksgiving, they get a day. You get 4 days. You know, Easter, these guys get a day. You get 5 days. So, you know, I say there's a lot of blessings, and I enjoy teaching there. We have a good staff, and we really do have a good time there at Fairview Christian School, and certainly a lot of hard work. All right, Ryan, I think there's three pictures here of Open Gate. You can go through them quickly. 1, 2, and 3. Open Gate is our Tuesday night children's ministry that is going on as we speak. My daughter Sherry was busy today working on the crafts for tonight. And I don't know what the attendance is there. I'm not too actively involved in it, drive the bus once in a while, but I think anywhere from 75 to 125 children come out on a random Tuesday night. I'd say they probably have it maybe 40 Tuesday nights out of the year. They take some time off, but it's about 40, and mainly staffed by two or three married couples from our church, and then our youth group, and then there's probably 10 to 15 that come in from mainly some of the other Keystone churches, Faith, I don't know if any from Myerstown, but a couple students from Terry Hill and that come down and help, which is a real blessing. And you know, children's ministry is hard work. And you know, I wish I could stand here and say, we bring them kids in the Open Gate and they come to our church and they become church members, but I honestly, you know, I cannot say that. I think we have one church member in our church that came through Open Gate. And so, but you know what? We don't look at results. We don't do that. But you know, it is nice to see some results sometime. We all like to see that. But you know, you plant the seed and you know, God giveth the increase. And so it's a lot of hard work. I really admire, you know, there's a group that I think of my brother-in-law and my sister who have probably been going to Open Gate probably since they were 15, and right now Amy's there every Tuesday, and she soon has 6 children in her house, and the oldest one's in second, third grade. Some of them are foster, but you know what? Dedication. And I admire many of the staff are at Open Gate every Tuesday night and church every Wednesday night. And so I thank them often, the commitment that they give, because, but it's a good ministry, and you know, we know the gospel's getting there. We're not, like I said, we're not seeing a ton of tangible results, but you can't, that's not what we're, you know what, you sow the seed. And I like that verse in Proverbs 22:6, very familiar, but I like the way I heard somebody interpret it. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, it will not depart from him. And so I like to look at it that way. You know what? What you give to that child, it's always going to be there. And, you know, there's one of my classmates is sitting in jail. A guy that graduated 10 years ago is sitting in jail. We have a lot of those stories, too, that simply did not turn out. But what we taught them is always going to be with them. And so that is what keeps us going. And I think a fellow was at our church and shared Wednesday night. And I think I shared this with the guys I had lunch with on Sunday, but he was talking about children's ministry, and it's good. The children are going to, that's the age they're going to hear, and they're going to retain that. But he was saying how, and where his stats, wherever he got them, I'm not sure, but I mean, I'm sure it's been researched. But if a child becomes a Christian, there's a 6% chance the whole family will. If the mother becomes a Christian first, there's a 17% chance. If the father becomes a Christian first, there's a 92% chance everybody will become a Christian. And so you really see how, we wish we could get the fathers and convert them, and the family almost automatically all follows. But the children are the ones that are coming. You know, at our Bible school that we just finished up, we had a few adults come in, but not very many. They are just harder to reach. So, all right, Ryan, I think there are about three crossover pictures, so give me those three. One, two, three. This is our Thursday night crossover basketball ministry. So there are some, only one or two, but I'm thinking some individuals that every Tuesday night they're at Open Gate, every Wednesday night they're at church, and largely every Thursday night they're at crossover. Now, crossover is on break right now, but there are many, many, many weeks that there's one or two people that are at all three ministries, and I say bless their heart, they are single. But the crossover ministry is, and again, you're working, this is geared towards guys 15 to say 20, and you're dealing with rough characters. These are mainly angry young men who really have nothing to live for. You know, they just... And it's just amazing. I mean, there was a vision of a fellow who's not with us anymore. He moved back to Ohio. His name was J.R. or David Slayball. He was an Amishman who moved in here and had a vision for this, and he started it, and then it was passed on to some of the men in our church. And I don't get there a whole lot. I don't do a lot with our Tuesday and Thursday. I'm at that building all the time, so... Some evenings I just want to go home and forget about it. So I don't go to too many of the evening ministries to keep my sanity. But when I am there, you know what? It's a volatile situation. You know, we've had some ugly things happen already. You know, we've had the police out. We've had, the one night was like an all-out brawl. And it was almost, we're like, how did everybody know who to punch? You know what I mean? But it's almost like they come in with all their baggage. And so every once in a while it implodes there. But it's been better the last year or two. But about 2-3 years ago, I was out of town that night. We got the phone call, but it had gotten pretty ugly. The one night the guy got mad and took his cell phone, whipped it as hard as he could across the court. There was another time. I was there a few times that the police were called out. So it's not unusual to have to call the police on Tuesday or Thursday night, but it's been better the last 2 years. It was probably a fall 2 years ago. It was really getting frustrating because we were calling the police all the time to deal with situations that we couldn't control. So bless the heart of the guys that run crossover basketball ministry. I always tell the guys, if anything breaks loose, just run. You know what? Because I know there's guns in there. I know there's knives. I know there's drugs. Whatever happens, I don't care. You just turn and run, because in Reading, they fight their battles. They shoot each other. They do what they do. You just run and don't worry about it. So the cool thing about crossover is what they started doing on Sunday mornings is they have Sunday school with these guys. Anywhere on a normal Thursday night, anywhere from 20 to 40 will show up. But then Sunday morning, and bless these heart guys again, this same guy, I won't say who it is, but he's here every Tuesday, every Wednesday, every Thursday, and every Sunday morning. He misses Sunday school and goes down and has Sunday school with these guys. And I think they've had up to 13 guys, sometimes zero show up. I think a normal is four or five of these guys show up and they have Sunday school with them on a Sunday morning at 10:30. A couple of weeks ago, some of the guys stayed and decided to rob us. Well, I guess it was more sometime over the winter. But so that Sunday morning Sunday school has been a real neat addition that we've been doing. I don't know, they've probably been doing that 3-4 years. And so not a lot of guys come out, but, you know, and again, a lot of these guys have made commitments to the Lord. I can't stand here and honestly say this guy and this guy and this guy are really serving the Lord. But a lot of, because every night at Crossover, they share the gospel or there's somebody preaches at them, talks to them. So they play basketball for an hour, have a Bible study, and then they play basketball for another hour. So they're certainly getting the gospel. But that Sunday morning part of Crossover basketball ministry has been really, really a good thing. All right, Ryan, moving on from Crossover. That's just a picture of my dad's house. I don't know if I'm sure Jimmy's and Lester, some of you guys have been there. And that was the March storm. And the walkways are shoveled probably because of me. So let me get some credit here. Just kidding. Might have been me. I don't know. But you know what I say? The one thing my father did, you know, back probably, I think in the late 60s, early 70s probably, he did take the plunge to move into Reading. And Clayton, I think, is going to be here, and Alan Roth, Brother Fox. Some of those guys decided, you know, the cities don't need to be avoided, like was almost in our blood. And there's all kinds of history on that, which I'm not going to get into right now, why the Mennonites tended to stay away from the cities and things. But, you know, I'm blessed, and I'm glad my father made that choice. And when I was growing up, which is in the same community I live in now, you know, we were like, there were hardly any, I'm just trying to think of what other Mennonites lived around us. There weren't many. Today, there's 25 families or households with church members almost within walking distance. But yet, and the neat part is it isn't like we're all on top of each other. We don't even see them. Like Arlen King, he lives right around the corner from me, and I wave to him once in a while. But it's like, it isn't like you're on top of each other. Ben Martin, our deacon, lives at the end of my street. Talked to him once in a while, but there's 25 families right around the church, but it isn't like we're like on top of each other at all. So I think that's a really neat thing, and I really enjoy that aspect of it, that so many people have made the decision and moved in houses like this. Go ahead, Ryan, give us the next slide there. Of course, this is where we are at today. And in Reading today, I think there's 5 to 7 Mennonite churches. They kind of come and go. The only one that is somewhat conservative besides Fairview is Shiloh. All the rest would not be conservative in their dress or the way they would look. And in fact, the Open Gate, the 2-week Open Gate, rents one of those churches for their Bible school. So there are a number around, but I don't even know where they're at. You know, there's one on Franklin Street's been there a while, but a lot of them kind of come and go. And so there are some Anabaptist churches around. Another, go ahead, Ryan, hit the next slide there. This was just on Friday night. Our Bible school was another kind of real avenue where we can reach into the community. You know what? We could get as many children as we wanted. Okay, we could bring in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds if we would try to, but we can only handle so many. And so I think this year, I'm guessing we had about 150 young folks from Reading in our Bible school. And that was enough. We didn't run a bus route for a number of years because too many children were coming. Then this year, the first night, we hardly had anybody. I think it was the change of the building. Maybe we didn't get the word out, but the first night, there was like hardly any children from the city, and some of the teachers panicked. What's going on? We got to run a bus. And I would have just said, nah, they'll get here. They'll come. And they did. But we did run a bus, but they came out of the woodwork. And so we had a large Bible school again. And it's a blessing. Then like Shenandoah does, we do a block party. This was our block party the last night. But growing up, everybody went to Fairview's Bible School. You know, and it's that way. There's some older Caucasians left in East Reading. But those that are left that have been there all their life, I can almost guarantee you they went to the Fairview Bible School. The Latino people move an awful lot. Not quite as much, but as they used to. They're getting a little more stable, but they really move a lot. You know, New York to Reading and then to here to there. So you don't have that third, fourth, you know, those generation, oh, I went to the Fairview Bible School. But that certainly, as I was a little boy, everybody came to the Fairview Bible School. And so our Bible school is a real time we reach out into the community. I don't think I have any pictures of 2-week open gate. Many of you are familiar with that. But that's been a real neat ministry that's been going on the last probably 10, 15 years. They do a couple Bible schools in Reading. They do them during the day, so the attendance there is usually more like 75 to 100, where evening, you have an evening Bible school, and they really do pack the place out. All right, Ryan, give me the next picture. I think it might be, this is a big thing in Reading, okay? I'm like this with the mayor's assistant in keeping Reading clean. You know, we pick up a lot of trash in Reading. Like Clayton, he'll probably talk about it, but we're always picking up trash in Reading just because it's the obvious, Reading's trashy. And you know what? We're trying to be an example. But I have a good relationship with the mayor's office there and picking up trash. And in fact, tomorrow night, our church is picking up trash. Like somebody said to us, we get together every Wednesday night and we huddle up in our church. Why don't we get out and do something? So tomorrow night, we're actually going to be picking up trash around Reading and having tracks in our hands. And here, you know, they sit there on the porch smoking, watching you pick up their trash. And, you know, then they feel guilty, though. You see that sometimes. And here's a track, you know. So that's what we're going to do tomorrow night. But our school has a trash-a-thon, and SMBI comes once a year. They pick up trash. A youth group comes once a year. They pick up trash. Church picks up trash. Anybody who shows up in Reading picks up trash. So they give us orange bags, and then we fill them up, and then the city comes and picks them up with the trash truck. So that's a big thing, our trash pickup. All right, is that the last one there, Ryan? And it looks like it's about time to close at 8:15. So that is a real quick thing of some of the things that are going on in Reading. You know, the city's not the only place to live. I like the city, but I'll admit, you know what, it's really, it's kind of all I know. So I don't view it kind of like, is this, you know, my father was a little more, as Lester can vouch for this, he was a little more, you gotta live in the city. You know what, city's the place to be. You know, I am that way, but it's because it's sort of, it's in my blood. It was his choice, so I live in the city because I don't wanna have to cut all your grass. I don't wanna have to milk all your cows. I don't wanna have to, you know what, I kind of, does that make me lazy? I don't think. But you know what? I like the macadam. I like street lights at night. It's so dark in the country. You know, I like having a pizza shop at the bottom of my hill and a Chinese right over here and the Coke machine right there. You know, I'm just city-fied. And so I like, and there are many opportunities. And the thing I say too is we're not running around all day witnessing. You know, we live in the city. And you know, we have lots of opportunities. But you know, sometimes people, you know, they come and they bring a youth group or bring whatever and they want to spend the weekend and almost like they're going to follow you around like you're in Grenada being a full-time missionary. And I don't view it that way. You know, it's a long haul. You know, there's my one neighbor goes to our school. My other neighbor used to go to our school. You know, so we're touching a lot of lives. But, you know, I don't view myself as this full-time missionary. It's just, for me, it's in my blood. It's where I want to live. I don't want to live in Myerstown or Schaeferstown. I don't like the country. Okay. But I don't see it like a holy thing that, you know, I think the Lord can use you wherever you are planted. Make sure wherever you're planted. For me, it just happens to be the city, and I like the city for a lot of reasons. And so, you know what? That's a little picture of some of the things that are going on in Reading. I will say Reading is high-paced. You can see there's a lot of things going on, and sometimes, you know, you get a little tired, but we got a lot of good people. So it's time to close. But did anybody have a quick question? Maybe something I said or any quick questions before we close? So if there's a young lady here, you know a young lady that would like to be a part of the ministry, I'm still looking for somebody, a young lady to help teaching in the lower levels. So good opportunity. All right, hey, we'll have a word of prayer and then I guess you're done or whatever. Okay, let's pray. Lord, we thank you for the many local ministries that are amongst us. And Lord, bless all of those. And thank you for opportunities to minister. And bless the work there at Fairview and the others that are sharing this week, and Sixth Street and Tidings of Peace and whoever is sharing. Lord, we thank you for the opportunity. Lord, we thank you that we have the message that a hurting world needs. And I pray that we would faithfully share the message that they need. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right. Thank you very much.